Why do I conduct my show in this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Think stomach batteries to power. Reminds us.
Oh, baby, it's the Cup of Joe radio show, show number 18. That music rocks, that's Metallica. And, by the way, Metallica, I stole that! I stole it off Kaza. You guys never got a penny from me. Probably sue my ass after that. How you doing? This is Joe Vecchio, your not-so-humble host. Welcome to yet another whacked out episode of the Cup of Joe radio show. It is 2 a.m. on Thursday, March 25th. Yesterday was the 24th, 25th. And I'm actually, even though it seems like I'm in a really good mood, I am actually very upset with myself. Well, yeah, not very upset, but upset. Upset with myself because, you know, well, how do I explain this? Did you ever do something and just absolutely regret how you dealt with the situation? Okay, let me just tell you what the hell happened. Okay, it started last week. And, you know, I wear glasses. You've never seen a picture of me unless you dig around. You can do a Google search and you can find pictures of me on the web. God knows why you would want to, but I do wear glasses. And because I have been either unemployed or not had health benefits of any kind in a lot of the jobs I've had over the last couple of years, and I was unemployed for almost a year last year, I haven't had an opportunity to get new glasses because, let's face it, glasses are expensive if you don't have insurance. You can pay $100, $200 for glasses, and for some of you, that's nothing. That's a drop in the water. You know, maybe a few of you listening to the show actually make some real money. Me, I'm making right now, I make about $11.50 an hour, which is, you know, marginal. But, you know, it's enough to pay the bills. But if I had to pay for glasses without insurance, I couldn't really do it. Not easily, anyway. Not if you're trying to catch up with back rent and stuff like that. But anyway, haven't changed glasses for a long time. That's the thing. And finally, I had a situation where at my work, I could change glasses. Now, basically, what they did was, and I didn't find out about this until much later, and it's my fault for not digging into this stuff enough, but where I work, you require safety glasses. I haven't generally been wearing them, mostly because where I'm working in the shop, you don't really need them. I mean, there's no welding sparks flying around or anything like that, but they're nice to have. And you can get prescription safety glasses. There's a company, and I'm not going to reveal the name of the company because I don't want to get on their case about it. But there's a company that's like contracted with Siemens, with our local Siemens, to get eyeglasses from. And they do both. In fact, they do both hearing and vision. At any rate, so I was told that I would have to shill out $25 for an eye exam, which is not too bad. $25 for an eye exam, not too bad. And then the safety glasses would be free, basically just glasses with these special things along the sides that basically protect and cover your eyes rather than wearing safety. Because, you know, if you try to wear safety goggles over glasses, it just sucks. It sucks to no deal. Well, anyway, so I go and get my eyes examined. Now, I'm nearsighted, and in fact, it used to be worse in my left eye. And in fact, it used to be so bad in my left eye that when I was very young, that my left eye kind of went off on its own. So I don't look out of both eyes at the same time, you understand? And I can switch which eye I look out of. But anyway, my left eye was very nearsighted, and my right eye has been getting progressively worse as I'm, you know, I'm getting older. I'm 42 years old. You know, I'm not a kid anymore. And, you know, so anyway, I'm sitting there, and I've got these glasses, and I need to get new prescriptions. So I said, okay, $25 an eye exam, and I get a free pair of glasses. Okay. So I go down there, and they give me the eye exam and all that. And the lady there who works there, who's nice enough, and she's worked there for a long time. She's been in the industry for, 30 years, she said. And she tells me, you know, I should get bifocals. And I don't want to get bifocals. Now, you know, bifocals now are not the same as bifocals back when, you know, Ben Franklin invented them. A lot of people don't know Ben Franklin invented bifocals. I mean, it used to be, I remember people who had bifocal lenses. It was a very clear delineation. And these new glasses didn't have that. There was no clear delineation when I got the glasses today, finally. And when you, as you change the motion of your head, the move, the, you know, the position where your eyes are looking out of the lens, the focus changes. And I have a moth in here. There's a moth in here. Hang on. Come here, you. I don't like to hurt you, but I don't know what else to do with you. Okay. Anyway, taken care of. I'm sorry, Mr. Moth. I couldn't have you flooding around on me. All right. Anyway, what I was saying, and, you know, I tried to tell them when I got the exam that I really didn't want bifocals. I did not want bifocals. I don't need to read on the job in the sense of like reading a newspaper. When I read the newspaper or read a magazine or read a book or something, I take my glasses off to read. But for the type of reading that I do at work, reading signs or looking at a part number on a part, I really don't need to take my glasses off for that, and bifocals are not going to help me. But the lady was very insistent, and because I had never tried bifocals before, I decided, after a big fight within myself, I decided I would let her convince me to do the bifocals things, and I regretted it from the second I did it because I know how I am. I know how I am, damn it. And yes, she may be have been in the business for 30, 40 years, I grant you that. Knows more about eyeglasses than I do, I'll grant you that. But, you know, these are my eyes. And I have had my eyes for 42 years, and I think I know what's right for me and what's comfortable for me. However, because I am a weak-willed, you know, goof-off, I let her convince me, and I shouldn't have. And the only reason I let her convince me is because I asked, if I don't like these eyeglasses, can I get them replaced for free? And with the just regular, what they call distance glasses or regular frames. And she said yes. So I waited, and that was like last Tuesday, I think it was, that I got these did the eye exam and went in for those glasses. And I got them today for the first time. It was supposed to be out on Friday, but I guess because it was bifocals, it took a little longer. Doesn't matter. I finally got them today, and I put them on. And I put them on for like 3 hours out of work. And I realized that maybe that's not enough time. But the problem I noticed immediately was having a various focus on these glasses, depending on where you're looking out of. It's very difficult for me to look up somewhere and to maintain focus, because you have to switch where your eyes are looking out of. And if I tilt my head up, I lose focus because now my eyes are looking out of like the middle part of the glasses or even the bottom part of the glasses, and anything from a distance is going to be blurry. And there's like a clock where I work that I need to look at because I need to know, you know, when certain things are happening, you know, schedule myself with certain things. And when the break times are coming, yes, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, I'm a clock watcher. I always have been. I like to schedule things. I like to look at the clock. It doesn't necessarily mean, timing everything to get off of work sooner. I just like to know what time it is. I'm kind of antsy that way. And, you know, my watch broke yesterday. I have to wear a pocket watch because I can't wear a wristwatch. And that's another story. The metal affects my skin. But again, that's another story. In fact, it was part of that. When I got my new glasses, they told me I should get stainless steel or titanium frames because my skin reacts to metal a certain way. So anyway, I was pulling my watch out of my pocket, and it simply fell and broke on the floor. But that's another story. So, you know, I have no way of being able to look up at the clock, which is up near the ceiling, and it's a fairly tall ceiling where I work. It's probably around 35, 40 foot high because it's a big warehouse type of place, you know. And I look up and I can't see the clock with these glasses because if I have, tilting my head up, I have to look out of the middle or lower part of the lens, and everything's blurry. And if I lower my head to try to get the eyesight, and sometimes it goes behind the basket or goes behind something that's blocking the way, or it's just very painful to hold my head in that position and look up at the top, and it doesn't help me. It doesn't help me. So tomorrow, I'm going to go there, and I hope to God I can avoid a big fight, you know, because I don't know why the lady was so insistent on it, but she was very insistent. You know, she says, oh, you'll love it, and then, yeah, wonderful. Okay, I've tried it. Now I want to return these, and I want to get regular distance glasses. None of this bifocal shit. None of this bifocal shit. Yeah, and I get so angry at myself. Has that ever happened to you? Anybody out there, email me. Let me know. JOEVEC@bellsouth.net. Have you ever done anything like that where you let somebody talk you into something that you knew from the second you did it was just going to be wrong? And that's exactly what I did. It was wrong, and I was berating myself for being a weak-kneed, weak-willed, you know, Frugenfragen, whatever the hell word you can throw in there. So I was very upset with that. And I'm wearing my old glasses, which, of course, I did not get rid of my old glasses. And I don't want to get too down on these people, but the lady was very insistent, and I thought, you know, she got a little bit too insistent on it. And it's like, look at my eyes. They're my glasses. You know, I'm the one who has to live with them. You know, so and I hope I don't have to get into a big fight with these people. I don't really want to argue. Just give me my damn glasses. You know, I paid $25 for the eye exam. You've got a contract. You know, you talk me into the things, and I really don't want them. And, you know, you told me that this would be just replaced, and that's it. And I'm supposed to get regular glasses from these people once my insurance comes through. And I did enroll in my insurance, finally, today, after a big fight with them. They never sent me the stuff that I need for, you know, what information or what I'm supposed to do, how to enroll, when I was supposed to enroll, stuff like that. And then I got a letter in the mail saying, well, you chose to have no benefits. And I'm saying, now, wait a minute. And, you know, if I had not done anything about it, I would have had to wait until next year to re-enroll. So I just, you know, I made an appeal, and I called, and at first I bitched at the service center people for sending me this letter, and I wasn't really particularly mean, but they told me that I have to write an appeal, and I got a letter last week sometime saying, okay, no problem, you can go ahead and enroll now. And, you know, I don't understand this wait a year business. Why do you have, you know, and it's not like, and it doesn't even make sense from a scheduling point of view. They're not enrolling everybody at the same time every year. It's just that you have to enroll by 45 days into your work because your probation is for 90 days, and it takes about 45 days for the insurance to take effect. So you have to enroll 45 days before. And I'm thinking, why does it take 45 days? What is going on here? And why do you have to wait a year to enroll if you miss your enrollment period? Why can't you enroll at your own convenience after that? There's something not right there. There's just something not right. And I don't really, you know, I don't know from any of this bureaucratic gobbledygook bullshit. You know, I get into it enough with, I don't know if I told this story on the radio, when my wife had gone to the hospital, and she was on Medicaid at the time, and she had to go and get a prescription for some very strong painkillers because she had had a liver biopsy. And if you know anything about a liver biopsy, they stick a needle into your chest, all the way across into your liver to get a little sample of your liver there to find out if it's cancerous. And thank God it was benign. There was no real problem. But the biopsy itself is very painful because that's a wound that has to heal. And my wife is very sensitive to pain. And she was in such tremendous, you know, and when we got finished with the biopsy, and she had been actually in the hospital for something else, and they were doing that as an extra thing, and she had been in the hospital for 5 days, and she was finally going home, and we went down to the pharmacy to get the medicine that she needed, and we had to go to a CVS because the pharmacy that was at the hospital had closed down, you know, and the pharmacy is sitting there telling us that we don't have Medicaid, and so therefore we have to pay full price for this medicine, which would have been something like $250, $300. This is very specialized medicine, pain medication. with, you know, and the Medicaid, the whole thing would have cost us maybe $15, $20, no big deal. But, you know, I didn't have time to argue with them, and we both were just tired and anxious to get home, and we don't have a vehicle, you understand, so it's a long process, you know, to get home for us. So, you know, we figured she can last until the weekend, and we can get this stuff straightened out, and, you know, the Medicaid. Well, we went down, she had actually, the pain got so bad over the weekend, they actually had to call an ambulance for her again to get her back into the hospital, and they gave her temporary pain medication there, but they couldn't give her a full prescription. You have to go to the drugstore. So they wrote a note for the pharmacist saying, you know, she is eligible according to our records. Her Medicaid is active and stuff like that. And we went down to the CVS, and it was, you know, and actually I had to go by myself because my wife was in too much pain. I had her take a taxi home while I went out and, you know, dealt with the pharmacy. And, you know, they were giving me the same bureaucratic bullshit, and I just went off on them. And I yelled at him, and I was, you know, I was demanding. I said, you know, I'm not walking out of here with that medicine. I'm not walking out of here without that medicine, you know. And I swear to God, if for some reason I have to call an ambulance again to take my wife to the hospital because the pain is too unbearable for her, I'm going to make sure someone sends an ambulance for you. Now, you know, no one's allowed to lose their temper in this country anymore. If you lose your temper, my God, that's a horrible thing. You can't lose your temper. I may be beating you to a pulp. I may be kicking you in the face, but my God, you can't lose your temper. And, of course, they called the cops on me, and I explained to the cops in no uncertain terms what was going on, and thankfully the cops were understanding. And I wound up getting the medicine. They basically, the pharmacist there had the authority to just give me the medicine, you know, which she should have done in the first place. And she was saying, I'm not doing this for you because you raised a fuss. And I'm like, bullshit. I mean, I didn't say that, but that's bullshit. It was only because I raised a fuss that I got anything. And it's all bureaucratic bullshit. Don't let anybody ever tell you a lie that they think something can't be done. It's bullshit. The medicine's right fucking there. There's parts and things right fucking there. And you can get it. It's all paperwork. It's all bureaucratic gobbledygook nonsense that any human being, and I'm beginning to wonder if we have any human beings left in this country, can just say, to hell with it. Here it is. We'll deal with the paperwork issues later. Because we're talking about my wife in that situation. Just like this stuff with the eyes, it's my eyes. It's my eyes. But I wonder if any of you have ever had this before, where you've just done something where you're just ashamed that you didn't act in your own best interest enough. You know, the libertarians are good at stuff like that, because they're always, you know, talking about, oh, I made sure this and that and this and that. But, you know, it gets really, really damn complicated. If you want to be a libertarian, I mean, you have to be your own lawyer, because you have to know when you can and when you can't sue, or how the law applies to whatever situation you feel like. You got to be your own doctor, because God knows you don't know whether someone's ripping off, so the only way you can be sure if the doctor's ripping you off from that is to know all of medicine yourself. You know, I don't think I'm capable of being a doctor and a lawyer, you know, to determine what's best for me medically and what's best for me legally. You know, I'm always, you know, I'm not knowledgeable about that. Anyway, we're going to listen to some music here, and I'm going to calm down until the next segment, because the next segment is going to get me really hot, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Sit down beside me. Well, if I told you once, I told you once, once is all that you needed. So just lend an ear that you gotta hear. Well, I can take care of everything, and I can pick you the songs that you sing and the sights that you see. Now don't mind me, I care for you.
is red and your reasoning dead. When you tell nonsensical, hey, now you listen here. Let me make myself clear. You're not the first to get musical. Just take your pill, you might be a cheer. Well, I can take care of everything. I can pick for you the songs that you sing and the sights that you see. Now don't mind me, I'm carefree. Well, I will always keep the upper hand. And I can change your angry young man to a fashion show.
Smoke on the
Comfortably Numb, and before that, The Refreshments with Carefree. Over 30 years separate those songs. You know, I can play a lot of different kinds of music on the show, and on the Joey Jojo show, we tried to concentrate on playing new stuff, and I do play new stuff from time to time. The Refreshments is 90s. It's not really new stuff, but mostly I like the older stuff, so you'll forgive me, but you know what? It's my damn show. I'll play what I damn well want. It is Thursday, 3:04 a.m., Thursday, March 24th, and I am Joe Vecchio, and this is the Cup of Joe radio show. You know, I do plan on some improvements to the show. Changes aren't even really the right word. It's just a version of technology. I want to get some more guests in here or do some phone interviews, and I think I'm going to rig something up. I think I can rig something up where I can record things over the telephone. That would be really cool. That way I can do phone interviews on the radio, and that would be really nice. And, you know, just the occasional things, because, you know, just me talking is nice, and I'm told that I have a good voice for radio. I certainly have a good face for radio, although my wife would disagree. But anyway, we're going to try to do some different things in the future, and hopefully that'll pan out well. Now, for me, the big news for Wednesday was Richard Clark's testimony former National Security Council official, who has been yet another insider from the Bush administration to point out how this group of people were obsessed with Iraq and not very concerned about terrorism. And Mr. Clark's testimony was pretty damning, to say the least. And my question is, will that make a difference? Will that really make a difference? And that's really the scary part. Because there are still a lot of people in this country who are just going to back Mr. Bush for whatever reason. I was reading on Daily Kos today, one of the posts called Richard Clark Patriots. It's www.dailykos.com, and the post is called Richard Clark Patriot. They wrote a very good thing there, and let me read what it has to say. It's by D-H-I-N-M-I, which I suppose means D-Hin in Missouri, and this is what he had to write. He said, "It's tempting to overstate the significance of what many of us watched or heard this afternoon, but it's hard to imagine anybody who followed Richard Clark's testimony before the 9/11 Commission not being moved by the man's clear and simple statements of what he says is the truth. From his opening statement of remorse to the families of those who died in the 9/11 attacks, to his blunt descriptions of the Bush administration's neglect of counterterrorism, to his brilliant demolition of John Lemon's crassy partisan attempt to tar him as a partisan, Clark's performance was a powerful combination of understatement and bravura. Reading and listening to the reactions people have had to Clark's book, his appearance in the media, and now his stunning testimony before the 9/11 panel, it appears that we may have reached a turning point. Richard Clark is easily believed and not easily dismissed. Karl Rove wasted his ammunition on earlier whistleblowers like John DeLulio and Paul O'Neill, who compared to Clark are minor leaguers. Despite the assists of hacks like Lemon and the slimeballs at Fox News, this whistleblower will be hard to marginalize and ignore. The political heart of the Bush presidency is counterterrorism, and their former counterterrorism expert may have just ripped their heart out. Richard Clark is a hawk. He has been a Republican, and the most balanced summaries of his career show him to have been a bit of a loose cannon, too smitten by covert actions and insufficiently respectful of civil liberties. But he's the type of knowledgeable, dogged, and passionate analyst on whom every successful administration must rely for honest and non-ideological appraisals and advice. However, this administration doesn't value analysts, it values acolytes. Thus, it's not surprising this outraged insider has so effectively exposed the rank incompetence and rotten dishonesty at the center of the Bush administration. Furthermore, this administration doesn't respect people who aren't cynical idolaters of power like themselves. It's to be expected that they wouldn't heed the advice of someone whose character and motivations are so different from their own. The leaders of the Bush administration wouldn't listen to Richard Clark because, as he proved today, he is fundamentally what they will never be. Richard Clark is a mensch, and Richard Clark is a patriot." Very powerful words. That was very well said. You know, and that's the problem with the Bush administration, is that they are ideologues. And, you know, they talk about being a CEO president, and this is exactly how CEOs operate. CEOs do not believe in reality. They believe in bending reality. And they believe that by sheer force of will, they can change what really is. And the result is usually devastating. You see it in little ways, like just the little things, the little petty things that go on where I work and where all of us work, that are counterproductive to what the mission of the company is, that just go on because people are more interested in their little petty politics, or they're interested in their way of doing things as opposed to a way of doing things that actually works. And particularly when you talk to Bush, who is basically, and these people are essentially out-of-control salesmen. And I've worked around salesmen, and I know something about their mentality. And they have a very strong belief in the idea that by personal will alone, you can overcome reality. Let me explain. When I lost my my job at Nextel, I lost it because partly I had the nerve to speak up to my district manager. Not my boss, mind you, my boss's boss. And basically what he was telling, you know, he was bitching at me because my sales were low. And I was explaining what the reality was. We were in the lowest selling store in the district. And the reason why we were the lowest selling store in the district is because we had the least traffic of anybody. We were in a strip mall that was across the street from a mall that had a Nextel store. There were, by my account, in a five-mile radius, something along the lines of 18 to 20 stores that sold Nextel phones and Nextel products and Nextel service. It was very simply a question of oversaturation. It was a question of the fact that the store was not publicized properly so that people wouldn't come in. We would have days where we would see maybe three people come into the store. We're talking a store that's open 10 to 12 hours. And you might see three or four people in an entire day. You're not going to get sales out of that number of people. But, of course, district managers are not interested in hearing these things. In their reality, in their fantasy, if you're a good enough salesman, you'll find a way. Frankly, I'll tell you this. With the commissions that Nextel has, anybody who's that good a salesman is not going to want to work for Nextel. It's basically a denial of what reality is. And a failure to see something that goes above and beyond what they're looking for. You know, and I told him, and I told my boss then, that, look, you know, maybe I'm not the best salesman you have in a district. And actually, when I was working at a store that had a lot of traffic, my sales jumped up. I was actually the number four salesperson in the district. But, of course, for my district manager, that still wasn't enough for him, right? You should strive to be number one all the time, be that competitive. And I'm not really that competitive. But when you believe that you should just do it, and it doesn't really matter what steps you take to do it, and you refuse to listen to anybody else as to why it's happening, then you lose out. I told him, I said, just because I am not the best salesman in here doesn't mean that I can't be of use to Nextel. I'm a good organizer. I'm a good motivator. I work well with people, and I'm a good supervisor type. I would make a very good store manager. There are other reasons to keep me. And he was a baseball fan, so I used a baseball analogy. I said, look, the Braves had this guy at third base for the year, I forget his name, Vinny Castilla. And he wasn't really producing very well at the plate that year, even though he had in the past. But he was a very good, and is a very good, defensive third baseman. And that's why you keep him. There are other reasons to keep people. But he didn't want to hear it. And that's the same way with the Bush administration. It's on a much larger scale. They don't want to hear it. They're not interested. This is what we want, and you do what we want, and if you don't do it, we are going to punish you for it. If you disagree with us, we are going to label you as a traitor. We are entirely politically motivated, and we're not interested in the truth. We're not interested in the facts. We're interested in how we can get what we want accomplished, no matter what lies and what deceit we have to tell them. The sad part is that there's so many people who just fall for the bullshit. That's the sad part. And I know some of these people. And I shake my head and I wonder how they get through the day, knowing that they've been lied to, or at least living in denial. Now, Clark is the most credible witness. I mean, he's not the only one. Paul O'Neill, a Treasury Secretary, a cabinet post person, in his recent book also pointed out the obsession the Bush administration had with Iraq. Then there was Joseph Wilson, who talked about how the Bush administration had insisted that there were weapons in Iraq when, of course, there were none. There's apparently a report out of an Iranian news source that the U.S. has been attempting to plant weapons in Iraq, and it just simply wouldn't surprise me. And there was, and for Mr. Wilson, the punishment he got was having his wife outed, who was a CIA agent, which put her life in jeopardy and put the lives of other CIA agents and operatives in jeopardy. These people simply don't care. These people simply don't care. So this, and this is exactly how CEOs work in America now. This is what CEOs do. They work in secret. They have no accountability. And they simply say, this is what it is, and if you don't get it, then you're either fired or we're going to close up shop and get out of here. There's no accountability. There's no sense of responsibility. None of it. And yet, if we, you know, we as poor regular workers, if we are anything less than completely 100% active every second we're on the job, somehow we're doing something wrong. We're the ones who are supposed to be accountable and responsible. And the Bushes and the Cheneys and all the other assholes in this administration, where's their sense of personal responsibility? Where's their sense of remorse for over 500 U.S. soldiers killed and for thousands of Iraqi lives lost for no reason? It's a damn shame. It's a damn shame. And I wonder what it's going to take, because the newspapers are all behind Mr. Bush. I read the Journal Constitution today, the Urinal Constipation, and they were still, you know, behind, which they had kind of a blistering editorial, but you know what? The news was still, it's partly Clinton's fault. Grow up, people. Wake up. You're being lied to, and it's not helping. I'll be back.
reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance. No flashbulbs, no wine. He's haunted by something he cannot define. Bowel-shaking earthquakes of doubt and remorse assail him, impale him with monster truck force. In his mind, he's still driving, still making the grade. She's hoping in time that her memories will fade. Cause he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's striving and driving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom still burns. Cause he's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance. He's going for speed.
Singers Lonnie Mack and Twang and Eddie Hisman ring, we're going steady. Take it easy, take me high, lie, lie, house of fire. Locomotion, poker, passion, deeper purple satisfaction. Baby, baby, gotta, give me, getting hotter. Sammy's cooking, Leslie Gore, Richie Valens, end of story. Maha Vista, Fujiyama, Kamasutra, Rama Lama, Richard Perry, Spectre, Barry, Rogers, Archers, Nielsen, Harry, Shimmy, Shimmy, Coco, Pop it, Fats, back and finger, pop it.
Life is a rock.
Golly, Simon, Abby, Holder, Roman, Stoney, Centerfolder, Johnny Cash and Johnny Rivers, Cancer, now I got the Shearers, Mungo, Jerry, Peter, Paul, Apollo, Mary, Dr. John, the Nightly Turper, Doris, Day, and Jack the Ripper, gotta go, so gotta sweat a Leah Russell, give me Sheldon, Miracles, and Smokey, Bliss, a slide, guitars, a Fender, bass, and Mushroom, Mumbling, Bonnie, Bramley, Wilson, Pickett, Snob, a kick it.
Life is a rock, but the radio. Life is a rock.
Jay and Dale and Ronnie, Kukla, Fran and Norman, Oakland, Denver, John and Osmond, Donnie, J.J. Kale, J.J. Top and L.L.B. and D.D. Dana, David Bowie, Steely Dan, and Sammy Prada, C.C. Ryder, Edgar Winter, Jordan Summers, Ida, Marcia, Connie, Fonda, Eric Clapton, Peter Wallace, Stephen Fox, Doodah, Doodah, Good Vibrations, L.B. Ronda, Circa, Girl, Little Honda, Tata, Tata, Honey, Honey, Sugar, Yummy, CBS, and Water, Bob.
swim and toss the monkey, make a man play funky. Freddie King and Albert King, BB King and Tyler King, get it on and Matthew Hardy, Cavalotti, Helen Hardy.
Reunion. Life is a rock, but the radio rolled me. I don't know what year that came out. That goes back a ways, though. Cake with Going the Distance before that, and we began with the boss, Bruce Springsteen, and his big, big hit, Born to Run. How you doing? This is Joe Vecchio, and this is episode 18 of the Cup of Joe radio show, your free, totally free internet radio show. Thanks again to Ben Birch from the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. They are the ones who are archiving these files, and that's where I'm getting most of my audience, so thank you. I have some other things in the books, as I've mentioned before, and as soon as I get some word on how that's going, I will let everybody know. I want to follow up on something that I said earlier. Now, you know, I don't do this show on the same day. I mean, I usually record three segments, and I have two or three songs, depending on how long the songs are, in between. And, you know, the shows are about an hour and a half, whatever. That's the wonder of doing internet radio. I'm not limited by time, or I'm not constricted by time in any way. So the shows can be as long or as short as I feel like. At any rate, I mentioned how I was angry with myself because I wound up getting the bifocals. I let myself get talked into getting bifocals when I really didn't want them. And I tried them out for, honestly, only a few hours, but to be perfectly honest, those few hours were all I needed to tell me that this was just wrong for me. So, I was planning on going back there today, but I was running a little late today, and I just went to work as normal. But the people were there. They not only do, like I mentioned before, they not only do the vision stuff, they also do hearing. And they were doing hearing tests today in the shop. So I went down there, and I went down to where the nurse's room where they were at, and I said, listen, I really don't want the bifocals. And I was hoping like crazy I wouldn't get into a fight. And she kind of sort of started, but I said, look, I really don't want to argue with that. You know, I just want the regular distance lenses. So, you know, they're going to call, and I'm going to get that taken care of on Tuesday. I still feel bad that I allowed myself to get talked into that sort of thing in the first place. I should know better. And so I know I'm a pain-in-the-ass customer, but I should have known better and not allowed myself to get talked into. I'm gonna ask everybody out there listening a question, whether it's the 200 or 300 people who are downloading the show, and I really don't know who all is downloading the show. Of course, I appreciate emails and I appreciate feedback. I've been getting a couple of people who are writing me regularly, but I'd like to hear some more feedback if there's that many of you out there. Surely some of you can drop me a line email-wise. It's joevec@bellsouth.net, or go on the blog and leave something in the comments for the particular show. This one will be show 18. It doesn't cost you anything, or you don't have to register for anything to leave a comment. And that's cupojoe.blogspot.com, cupojoe.blogspot.com. Or you can do a search for Cup of Joe. Actually, mine shows up pretty much top of the line. And I get a lot of hits from people doing a general search for Cup of Joe. So, and I'm not the only one who uses this title. But anyway, for all of you who are out there listening, and again, I don't know how many of you are there, but for all of you who are out there listening, I want you to ask yourselves a question. For those of you who are working, I want to ask you if you like your job, and if you had a choice, in other words, if you were independently wealthy, or if you managed to get a big inheritance, or something, or this and that, would you continue to work at your job? That's what I want you to know. Because I'm telling you right now, for all of you who are working for a living, like people like myself, and I know this and I freely admit this, you're getting ripped off. I have come to the conclusion after 40-something years of my life that work is nothing more than a ripoff. You never get as much money as you're supposed to get, as you deserve. At least you're not this way. I mean, back in my parents' day, and back in my grandparents' day, at least the post 1932, after the New Deal, and after it was unions were legalized and working people started banding together. But anywhere around that era, from like 1935 to like 1970, you know, back then, you know, working people had it pretty good. If you had a job, you know, you did pretty well. And there were times during that span when I don't know if you couldn't find work. But the fact of the matter is, especially up in the Northeast where the unions were stronger, you had better pay and you had better opportunities to make a future for yourself. And this just don't exist anymore. That world is gone. If we want that world again, we're going to have to fight for it. But that's a topic for another discussion. What I want everybody out there to do is I want you to think about your job and think about what you would rather do for a living if you can. And what I'd like for you to all do is this. I want you to think real seriously, and I want you to go out and start looking for other work. Something along the lines of something of what you enjoy doing. Because you know something? There is no better thing in the world than getting paid for doing what you enjoy. There is absolutely nothing, because it's not even work. I'll give you an example. When I was working at, I took a job at a one-hour photo lab not far from my house. I had previously worked at a print shop, and that was a long drive. I lived in, at the time, Alpharetta, Georgia, and I had to go all the way to Marietta, Georgia. And for anybody who lives around here, that's a pretty decent drive. It's like a 45-minute drive. And I took this job when I left that job. Actually, I got fired from that job. But when I got fired from that job, I went to work in this photo lab. And I was getting less money, but I was saving so much in gas because it was only like 5 minutes from where I lived. It was pretty much walking distance. If they had any decent sidewalks up in Alpharetta, it was walking distance, maybe 45-minute walk at the most. But it was very close. And, you know, I really, really enjoyed that job. I liked running the photo machine. I loved seeing really nice pictures. People would turn in vacation pictures. And before anybody asked, no, I didn't get a whole bunch of nudie pictures. People taking private pictures of themselves and stuff like that. You know, the area where I lived, you really didn't see any of that thing. Mostly it was people's vacations and things like that. And your typical stuff, birthdays and family get-togethers and stuff like that. But every now and then I saw something really spectacular. There were some people who went on a trip to Colorado and other places in the Northwest, and they're just beautiful, beautiful. And I used to make blow-ups of that for myself, and I would ask the permission of the people, you know, doing it, and sometimes I would offer them something extra for the and I would never take, you know, get a picture of something where a person was inside it, just usually, you know, scenery shots, which I happen to love, and I have a lot of great scenery shots that I took myself, and I used to have a really cool camera. But anyway, I loved the job, and I liked being, you know, just the photo processor. And after a while, there was a situation with the manager there, and the manager left, and or at least, you know, well, it was a whole convoluted story, but the crux is that they asked me to be the manager of the store, and I had never been a manager before in my life. And I was scared as hell, and I was worried that I wasn't going to be able to do it, but I said, yes, I'll do it. And those first couple of months, it was some of the hardest work, but some of the best work I've ever done in my life, because I really, again, I can't emphasize how much I enjoyed just sitting there running the machine. It was a little kiosk, not even bigger, slightly bigger than a kiosk, a little area inside a Kroger supermarket. And we did 1 hour, and we did some, you know, overnight processing, but really Kroger had their own deal for that, and I generally sent people over to them because they tended to do a better job of that, and quite frankly, it wasn't worth my time to do it. But, you know, it didn't matter. It didn't matter to me one way or the other. But, you know, we really did the 1 hour stuff, and I was very good at what I did because I have a technical background and I love working the machine. But I was by myself was the big problem. I did not have any employees, and I was on salary being a manager, so it didn't matter how many hours I worked. And I was basically working the whole shift. I was working, God, it was like 70, 80 hours a week. You know, and what happened was it was the busiest time. It was Christmas. It was the busiest season for photo processing. And I was working actually extra hours because, you know, A, we were busy, and B, we had Christmas cards, which are specialty items that we did. And even though we could do them in an hour, generally people didn't need them that quickly. And what I basically tell people, if they had Christmas cards coming, come back, you know, tomorrow. And what I would do is I would do all the Christmas cards after I closed down the shop officially. I would just stay there till, you know, sometimes as late as 2, 3 a.m. But I didn't care. I loved the work. And that was the important thing. I loved the work. My wife can attest to the fact that I was talking to her on the phone, and she said she had never heard me happier in my entire life. And even though I was working, you know, when the Christmas season was over when I finally managed to hire three people, and one was my full-time guy, and I had two part-time guys. One worked the weekends, one worked on and off during the week. And because I've been a working guy, you know, I decided to myself that I was going to be unlike any manager that I had ever been. And because I was flexible with my people, I wasn't a control freak, they thought I was the best boss they'd ever had. And I was very happy with that. In fact, my full-time guy went on to manage a store of his own later on, and that was a great sense of pride to me. But the thing about it is I was just happy doing what I was doing. We had some regular customers. We had a guy who ran real estate, and he would always take pictures of the houses he was selling, and I would always give him some free reprints and stuff like that. And it was just a good way of dealing with customers. I had another lady who had a camera set up in her backyard to take pictures of hummingbirds. And every now and then she'd come and she'd have some beautiful pictures of some hummingbirds that would come over by her feeder. And it was just wonderful. I loved it. I loved it to death. And that's the sort of situation everybody should be in. We had a guy who was working with us named Chris Ward. Very nice guy. He was working with Dave and myself down on the paint line at Siemens. And, you know, it was one of those rare things where we were expecting him to kind of sort of leave because he wasn't happy with the Siemens job to begin with. But he basically quit in like one day because he got an offer to work for NFL Europe. Now, he had been a professional football player before. He played for the Scottish Claymores of the World Football League, or the NFL Europe League. And he got an offer to work for the Berlin Thunder as a trainee assistant coach. And he called, and he just left. You know, he jumped on the job when he got it. I mean, he didn't give Siemens any real notice. But you know what? In a situation like that where you have that kind of opportunity, you shouldn't have to do that. You know, just go ahead, jump on it, because it was his dream. This is what he wanted to do. And he called up Dave. He calls up Dave every now and then, and the guy's working his ass off. He's working like 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. I'm not kidding you. You know, we're talking 14-hour days. But you know what? He loves it because he loves football and he loves coaching. And I'm asking everybody out there, everybody who's listening, I want you to take stock of your life. I want you to take stock of yourself. And I want you to think of yourself, what do I want to do with my life? And I want you to take the initiative and go out. I'm not saying go out and quit your job right now and leave you with nothing. That's stupid. That's just plain stupid. But I want you to go out and take stock of your life and say, this is what I want you to do. This is what I want to do. And I want you to work at getting that. This is what I'm doing here. You know exactly what I'm doing here. I like doing this little radio show. I would love the opportunity for someone to hire me to do this on a regular basis and improve it. Maybe have like a whole group of people that I work with that I can, you know, bounce ideas off of and stuff like that. Because while doing it by myself is okay in some respects, I kind of lose stuff because it's just me. And even though I know I'm a fairly entertaining person to listen to from time to time, it's nice to have that kind of feedback. I mean, Howard Stern talks, but he has, you know, Robin, and he has all this cast of characters. I don't particularly like him, but he has people he talks to. And all the other talk show hosts, they'll go on and they'll interview people and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm working at Siemens, and it's a good, steady, comfortable job. And if it was a situation where I knew I could have the job for as long as it was there, and, it may not be there, but if it was a situation like some people did when they first started at the place where I knew I could be working there 20 or 30 years, I might take a look at that and say, well, maybe this is what I want to do if I liked it that much. And it's not that bad a job. I've certainly had far worse jobs in my life. But I can't see myself 20, 30 years down the line, you know, pulling parts off a paint line. You know, it's just not me. It's something that I'll do when I have to, and maybe I'll use that as a springboard to do some work for the union, because I'll be in the. I got notified that I was voted in, and now it's just a question of some paperwork and stuff getting taken care of. So this time next month I'll be officially in the union. But the thing of the matter, the fact of the matter is, if I got offered something, you know, today, to do something in the radio, I'd jump on it. You know, even though it's a little less secure, and although, quite frankly, the job I have now isn't that secure. I mean, they are laying off 120 people. Laying off isn't even the right term. They're letting go 120 people. because they're moving part of that plant to Mexico. But it's possible that they might move the entire thing to Mexico. We just don't know because, you know, they're not going to tell us. But the truth of the matter is, if you're working for a living in any capacity, the odds are really good that you're getting ripped off. And if you're listening to this at work occasionally, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I don't have to explain anything to you. How your boss treats you, what the attitude sometimes of your fellow workers are, you know. You should go out there and strive to do something that you really like, even if it means a little less money. Because you know what? Money comes and goes, ladies and gentlemen. Money comes and goes. I have lived most of my life without much money. I'm always broke. Part of that is my fault because it's not so much that I'm lazy, but I've never known and never understood how to play the game. I've never fit in. But if I can do it, you can do it. And if you've got a job where your boss treats you really bad and you do get your other job and you're ready to go on, be as nasty and as verbally abusive as you could possibly be on your boss to let them know what you think of them and their crappy operation. Okay, maybe you don't have to be so mean. My wife is sitting there shaking her head. But, you know, be proud of your freedom. My comrade, well, he's not my comrade. What's the word for it? The guy I fight with all the time, Bruce Lewis, a.k.a. Beachon. You know, he wrote to me in the comment section. He said that you should rather die starving in the streets than live a life of slavery as a working man. And, of course, that's a bunch of horse shit, but I understand where he's coming from. I mean, you shouldn't starve in the streets for it. You shouldn't have to starve in the streets for it. But I understand exactly where he's coming from. You should take pride in your freedom and try to do something or get yourself in a situation where you can do something and enjoy yourself. There is no law, ladies and gentlemen. There is no law in the world that says work has to be a gritty, miserable experience. There is nothing in the world that says that. There is nothing that says you cannot enjoy yourself at work. I enjoy myself tremendously at my job. Even though there are tough times and we bitch about conditions there, I always have a good time. Dave and I are always cracking jokes and we're always having fun. In fact, we confuse this. There's one poor guy, his name is Joseph also, and he works hanging the parts. And he is from Ghana. And so, you know, his English is not the best and he doesn't always have, he's not always really great at expressing himself. But I get the feeling he takes things very seriously all the time and he just doesn't understand Dave and I. I mean, he went over the other day, and he was telling me that he thinks Dave is crazy, and I acted like I was completely insulted. I said, how dare you say Dave is crazier than me? I am the craziest man in this plant. I own the corner market on insanity at this plant. And he just walked away shaking his head. He just couldn't understand it. He couldn't comprehend that sort of thing. And I think there's a lot of people who are kind of like that. I knew a lot of people when I was working at different assembly jobs, and their jobs were the same old routine every day and in and out, in and out. And all they cared about was that they had a job. That's all they cared about. Nothing above and beyond that. I mean, they kind of sort of enjoyed themselves and they get a bitch around. You know, they went to work and on the weekends they had their little social groups, whether it was a church group or a bingo group or whatever. That was their whole life. And that I guess that's okay for them. But, you know, a lot of people just can't really see themselves. And, of course, nowadays jobs like that are definitely on the outs. As we change from a manufacturing economy to a more electronic communications service type stuff. You know, all those manufacturing jobs are going overseas for a reason. But, you know, we could replace those with other stuff if we had the balls to. But I'm telling you right now, if you can, if you've got something else going, especially if you've got a bunch of money saved up, and you hate your job, just leave. You know, that's what my brother did, too. My brother just left his job. He had a very good paying job. He's an electrician, and he was, I forget the name of the company he was working for, but they were just running them ragged, 10, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. And he was sick of it. He was tired of it. And he said, I'm quit. And they were like shocked. They couldn't believe anybody would do that. But you know something? I am damn proud of him for doing that. Now, maybe some other people in my family wouldn't understand that because, you know, they grew up in a different world or, you know, they don't have that sort of problem. And, you know, the reason I've had so many jobs is because I just won't put up with the bullshit as much as a lot of other people will. And I see the bullshit for what it is, and I'm not afraid to say it, and it's gotten me in trouble. I'm the guy who told my district manager when I went to worked at Nextel, not my boss, but my boss's boss, I told him I could do his job, which I could have done his job. And, of course, I got fired for that. Your boss doesn't care about you. Excuse me. I'm going to drink a water here. They're just using you. They don't even need to care about you. I mean, I'm not even saying that they should care about you or not. But at the very least, they should respect you and treat you like a human being. And a lot of times, they just don't. And again, most of you out there, I don't have to tell you anything about that because you know exactly what I'm talking about. I used to think when I was younger that you know, people were managers and people were supervisors and owners of places because they're more competent. That's not true. That's certainly not true. I have seen some of the most incompetent, rude, loudmouth idiots in situations, in positions of superiority over me. And I'm like, how did this person get their job? And sometimes it's just who they know, and sometimes it's just, you know, just luck of the draw, or they're willing to be much more ruthless as a supervisor to please their bosses. So go out and take a look and see what's out there. Take some stock in your life. Don't let them push you around. And get angry. Get angry and do something about it. I'm going to close it out here. Hopefully on a better note next week. Or our next cup show. I'm going to actually do another show in a couple of days or so, hopefully, and get it up on the air. I can do a little more during the weekend. Again, my schedule for that is I tend to do one or two shows or one or two segments a night. And then, like I did two segments last night, and I'm doing this segment tonight. So this is Joe Vecchio with the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Signing off. Goodbye till next time. Bye.